Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we're continuing our trip through season 12, the first season to largely not have Thomas Gibson in it. And we're going to be saying this a lot. You can really tell that he's not there. Oh, the show really doesn't know what it's doing. Which we will get to in a second. But first off, the second episode, or is it the third episode, they're going to put Emily in charge, and that's a whole other thing. But first, let's get to episode 1204.
Keeper.
Ooh.
When a Virginia state trooper comes across a homeless man carrying a bag of dismembered body parts, and the man subsequently flees the scene, the BAU searches the Appalachian Trail for a serial killer with a bizarre motive. Meanwhile, Reed deals with a personal crisis after his mother is accepted into a study on Alzheimer's disease.
Yep. So, interesting for a couple of reasons. We'll get there eventually. But first, I just want to say that, wow, is... If we hadn't come up with Meta Reed, right? This episode would have forced us to. Oof.
Oh, yeah.
He has to, like... And the thing is, like, this episode really makes you raise the question, why isn't she in a home, in a program, somewhere closer to Reed? Yeah. And it's like... It's because he'll do anything to not be near his mother.
Yeah, but he doesn't acknowledge that. He has absolutely seems to have absolutely
no awareness.
No awareness.
Yeah. Of his motives here and what he wants to accomplish here.
And nobody ever really calls him on it.
Nope. No.
You know?
What do you call it? Nobody calls him on it. All Joe does is he, you know, suggests this difference between, like, you can chase a cure that might not ever happen, or you can just spend time valuing time with your mother, right? And that is the binary that Joe offers him, right?
Uh-huh.
But no one calls him on the fact that he's trying to not spend time with his mother.
Yeah, I mean, it's perfectly clear. He never spends. I mean, even when he comes back this season and he's had this wonderful time in Paris with his mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I know.
Sure. Right? Yeah. You know, obviously, he didn't have a wonderful time, or he'd be going down to Las Vegas.
Yeah, exactly.
To see his mother.
100%. But he doesn't. He never goes to Vegas, almost never goes to Vegas to visit her. And he could have moved her. It has to be really bad, yeah, before he'll show up. Yeah. And he could have put her in a home closer.
Oh, for sure. He has all the money in the world.
Yep, he's got plenty of money.
There's no reason for her to be where she is in Las Vegas, because it's not like she meets people and she sees people. And
she doesn't have a ton of friends. Like, she doesn't have a giant circle of friends in Las Vegas.
Like, I can see why my mother never left Sault Ste. Marie.
Yeah.
Because, you know, why would she? I mean, yeah. She, because Diane would say, well, she could come down south, this sort of thing. And I'm going, thank God she didn't do that. But anyway, it was before Corona. My mother had a life here.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I don't know if I've mentioned it. You know, my uncle just thought she was going to move back to Holland after my mother died. And
your father died. You know,
my father died. Yeah. And my mother goes, yeah, but why would I do that?
Yeah. She's got a whole life in Canada.
She's got a whole life here. Not only, you know, it's like all of her friends and her bridge and she was at the museum. You know, she volunteered at the museum and she did all sorts of things.
Well, and that's
and
the
traveled
thing.
All the time. Well,
yeah. But someone like Reed's mother, right? Who has nobody. She has no social circle. She's been institutionalized for more than a decade at this point. So it doesn't matter where that institution is.
I don't think she'd had much of a social life before.
Oh, of course not. No, but I'm just saying, like, she's absolutely got no social life because she's been in an asylum for more than a decade at this point.
From one asylum to another,
exactly.
Given her disease, she's going to forget the people that at that asylum pretty quickly.
Oh, absolutely.
And just accept the people at this asylum.
And she'd be seeing her son more often. But that is unacceptable for her son.
For her son.
So, boom, there you go. But, yeah, this season is so fascinating because he's gone for so much of it, right? And then they do the jail storyline with him, and you're like, what, were they planning to do a bunch of this? Like, were they always planning to make this whole season about Reed? You know, like, what was the plan for this season? Because at the start of the season, it's setting up that it's going to be about Mr. Scratch focusing on Hotchner, right? That is what the first episode suggests. And then he gets fired next week. And I'm like, how much of the season did they have to rebuild? Was this whole season about Reed always what they were planning? Or was that a scrambling because they threw away all the Mr. Scratch stuff they wanted to do?
Yeah. And because Reed's around, right? Is not around for a lot of it. He was probably taking his director courses at UCLA.
Okay.
Yeah. No, he did go off to do that, I guess, you know, sort of.
During production.
Because he couldn't have just done it, you know, off production. And so I'm not sure that, I don't know how he did it, but he could have just done certain semesters and stuff like that. And the funny thing is, well, we'll get to that, but I don't know who decided on that.
Yeah, but where
it
this
may
change
explain
happened.
When we get to number six. We'll talk when we get to number six. Let's just talk right. When we get to number six.
All right, we'll do this episode first. All right, so anyway, there's a guy in the woods, and then we literally, and because this guy is in the woods, he runs around. He's got this. He imagines he has a dog. He doesn't have a dog. He doesn't particularly like dogs, which is crazy. Dogs are great. But the thing that puzzled me about this episode, right, as I'm watching it, is right at the start, you get, and my review, I think, excoriated this episode, because you get so many, like, weird lines and strange things they're saying, and then you get maybe the dumbest thing that has ever been said in the history of the show, which is, they're around at the table. And they're like, why would he keep a bag full of human body parts? Which is actually a really good question. But he has kept all of the body parts because he's crazy. And they're like, why would the killer have a bag full of body parts? And so Luke, who's new there, is like, because he's just doing his profiler courses. So he's like, oh, so it's like a souvenir. And then Emily jumps in with, maybe, or it could be a forensic countermeasure. And then JJ jumps in with, or he's keeping them as trophies. And I'm like, okay, trophy and souvenir are synonyms. So you're not offering new information there, JJ. But I would really like to point out that a forensic countermeasure is something to do. You do to keep people from linking you to the crime.
I'm
carrying your victim's body parts around in a sack is the opposite of a forensic countermeasure. Like, you basically couldn't be farther from a forensic countermeasure than that.
Oh, I know.
But somebody wrote that in the script, and Prentice said it, so now we live in that world.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just put a few of these episodes, these episodes down to, okay, they didn't know what to do when Hotch left. They gave, the one thing I would say is that I looked at it and said, you know, you should have just made Dave run the BAU.
Yeah, because she does not seem like she's competent to run the BAU.
Well, no, because he basically took over, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, then we come up with a reason. Well, episode six does a lot of things, but
yes, it does.
I can remember thinking, no, he should have, because he has at some level in those episodes, he can pull off the gravitas that is necessary.
Yes.
Now, that goes against the way they've constructed
the character up until this point. Yes.
Up until this point. But he could have pulled it off. He could have decided that.
But yeah, I'm going to take things seriously. I'm going to stop half-assing everything. I'm going to be responsible now. It's time for me to step up when the team needs me.
Yes.
But no, David Rossi isn't going to do that.
Well, no, David Rossi would never do that. So,
and that is what the show says. And so they bring in, and again, I don't begrudge Paget Brewster a job. Obviously, I'm happy that after the way this show and its producers screwed her over, I'm happy that she got a job and got paid, and I'm sure got paid well for these last four seasons she was in.
That they had to
give her
soften the, I mean, they sweeten the pot.
Oh yeah. I can only imagine. I can't say for sure, obviously, but you have to imagine they must have.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what gets me when I'm watching this. And it's like, I don't begrudge you a job, but the character of Emily Prentice should not be running things.
No. Well, yeah, but didn't we cover that when we did the final season. Viewing of the final season?
Oh, my God.
What? They want to make her the head of the FBI? Are you?
Oh, what a terrible idea that would be.
Holy shit.
But anyway, it was a weird start to the episode. Yeah, let's get back to the plot of this episode.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
There isn't an awful lot to say. Let me just say.
Yes.
You know, it was a very touching episode.
Oh yeah.
You know, you felt so sorry for this man.
Yeah.
And you felt so sorry for his brother.
Oh God, yeah. The guy who has had his entire identity destroyed by his relationship with this abusive monster of a father.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of these weird situations where it's like, you're disgusted by his actions, but when you find out what drove him to it, you're like, okay, he's not the real villain here. The abusive father is the real villain here. Because this guy he's barely aware of what he's doing. He's just killing his father over and over again.
Yeah, and the other one has just been destroyed by the drugs that he took because his father has destroyed him as well.
Yeah. And I mean, again, they're, the sub-theme of all of these episodes is always, you know, like, that the horrible parenting creates monsters. Like, that is the... If there's one theme that is in all of these things, that is the theme, right? Is that
Well, yes, except for every now and then when they forget that's the theme.
Well, yes. Every now and then.
And you have these serial killers who have absolutely no negative stuff in their backstory, I mean. But yeah, no, this follows, and I think... I don't know who played the big brother.
Yeah.
But he did a really good job of it.
Oh yeah. The thing is his way, cause he's barely like coherent for so much of the time.
Yeah.
But he plays the emotion really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very well. It was, you know, and so it elevates the episode above as usual.
Oh yeah.
But it elevates the episode above the plot above just the, as you say, some of the stupid things that people say.
Oh yeah.
You know, the poor Virginia State Trooper, right? He doesn't across the homeless man, but that's the only thing wrong with the synopsis.
Yeah.
He does find the bag of dismembered body parts, but he doesn't see the guy.
He doesn't actually see the guy. Well, yeah, and I'm sure that's just a confusion on the part of them, because in the beginning of the episode, he finds the body parts, and then we immediately cut to the guy sprinting through the woods, throwing away body parts.
Well, yeah, and he's there because you see him looking and seeing the guy and seeing the guy find the body parts.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So it's like, you could make the... If you were just watching that casually and not paying too close attention, you could come to the misapprehension, right, that the cop had seen him.
Yeah.
And if you watch the next scene, you'd know he didn't, but I don't ask that much about the people who write synopsises for the show.
No, we don't. as much fun as we make of whoever does these ones.
We don't ask them to be completely accurate about everything all the time. Well, no, and it's interesting because this is a thing that I'm going to do a lot on the show starting, you know, soon, is that I feel like dogs could have sorted this out right away. Like, he's literally, and I know the dogs would have a little trouble because there were so many corpses running around. But this guy, I mean, I hate to overstate this, but he is a homeless guy who, I've got to say, must smell incredibly strongly.
Yeah.
Right? This guy must smell terrible.
Yeah, not that the store owner mentioned it.
No, but come on. Look at this guy.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is that was just something, you know, you could have thrown that in there
without any.
Yes, the dogs. And nobody
actually... The dogs would have been able to find him no trouble at all.
Yeah, and then, like, but the point isn't probably actually take him back to wherever...
The murderers.
You know, Cormac, the murderer's place. The dogs could have just tracked that all the way back because the guy is covering up for his brother.
Oh, yeah. Like, they would have been able to follow... Like, his brother is literally, like killing people at the hog farm and then just dragging them into the woods, and then the brother covers up for him. But it's like, Cormac is not being careful about, dumping bodies in the right place and blah, 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 blah. Like, he's not being careful
at all.
He's
just killing his father over and over again,
and then his brother covers up for him. So, they should have been able to... dogs should have been able to track you to the crime scene almost immediately.
Yeah, but I don't think that they don't seem to understand about dogs. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've noticed on the show a lot. They don't understand how vital dogs are to the kind of tracking that they should be doing.
Yeah.
Because especially, like, and it's one thing when they don't have...
Now, they might not have found Cormac.
No, well, but they would have just had to wait at the hog farm.
Yeah, we don't know where Cormac is living.
No, I assume he's living around the hog farm.
Yeah,
but you're right.
Maybe
we don't actually
house.
Know for sure.
Yeah.
I was just assuming, but you're right. The show doesn't actually confirm where he's living, but it's like he's living almost like an animal himself. He is just like running out to club guys over the head and then kill them. And like, he is clearly not planning on surviving. Like, he has no long-term plan to get away with his crimes. This is all just instinct at this point.
As you said, and when an animal is a cornered, he gives up.
That was cute.
And, you know, and they have Emily dealing with this very well.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the writing around Todd, I think is his name, right?
Yeah, Todd is the older brother.
You know, the writing around Todd is actually quite good. And
yeah.
You know, but other than that, there's nothing. I mean, that's, I think, what's going to happen, because I do think last week's episode was shorter than our normal episodes, is that a lot of these episodes are just kind of perfunctory, and there's not an awful lot like you can complain about sort of things, and I'm going, I guess I could, but
I know, but there's honestly not a ton in this episode to object to. Like, it's a perfectly serviceable episode.
Yeah,
I'll stand by my statement that a dog could have solved this in the first hour, but you know, if you allow the show to, you know, like...
Why didn't the state troopers
bring out the dogs?
Bring out the dogs, and I'm sure that they did in
real
life.
They're a fugitive, like, every state in a real-life version. Every state has their own, like, fugitive trackers and a dog corps to be involved in that, and there's no reason they wouldn't bring out the dogs and solve this right away. But if you just let the show have that they didn't, everything else the characters do... try to communicate this guy, figure out who he is, figure out who he's talking about, and then just look for his family's, any location that his family has access to. Like, they find him in a very reasonable, rational way.
Yeah.
The only problem is that, you know, I have a hard time getting over the idea that a dog could have done it much more efficiently and quickly.
And why did they need the profile?
Yeah, though they don't need. I mean, the profile doesn't help them at all.
Profile really in this one, do they?
No, they basically don't. They barely profile at all, and it doesn't really affect anything.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we have
number 5, the Anti-Terror Squad.
Wow.
Don't start.
No, I'm going to start. I'll just let you read the thing first.
When three of the four members of a Winona, Minnesota family are gunned down in their sleep, the BAU sets out to determine if the sole survivor was behind the killings or if she was deliberately spared. Meanwhile, Garcia attempts to find the perfect gift for Alvez's dog.
Yeah.
Now, that was...
last week. Oh, no, all the stuff with the two of them and the dog. That was very cute.
Was just wonderful.
Very, very cute.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say they laid the groundwork to get the two of them together, necessarily, but it's interesting when you watch the first episodes with Luke and... Mm-hmm. You know that he's just there to replace Derek. Like, mm-hmm. we, the audience, knows that. And you actually have, I mean, it's a kind of a nice meta thing that the character of Penelope isn't ready for someone to come in and replace Derek, even though that is Luke's role on the show.
Yeah.
And it's like she's almost rebelling against what the producers are saying have to happen, which is he has to replace Derek.
Yeah.
And she's not ready to cope with that, so she, you know, resists his charms. And I thought that was a nice meta touch.
Yes, and I loved the pink sweater.
I know! And it's a very cute sweater.
And I'm sure that Roxy would have loved it. Luke might not have liked it.
No, no, I mean, sure he definitely did. That dog
Roxy
would have loved that sweater.
Would have been perfectly happy wearing pink.
100% I agree with you on that one. But no, I like the meta aspect of he's here to replace Derek, but she's not on board with that yet.
Yeah. And he, you know? And never mind, he is very sensible.
Oh, absolutely.
He's a straight up sensible character. You know.
Well, it's interesting because, like, fundamentally, he is, and we've talked about this before, but I mean, now we really get, I mean, we've talked about this before, not on the show, because we haven't had a chance to talk about Luke. He just joined the cast now. But you and I have talked about how it's like they're taking a second shot at doing Derek and have it be not toxic this time.
Yeah, a decent human
being. Because he has a lot of the same qualities, but Derek fundamentally had problems that he wasn't willing to deal with.
Yeah.
And Luke doesn't. Luke is a much more stable person, he's a much more healthy person, and he's a much better person to work with than Derek ever was.
Yeah.
And I think that's great.
Yes, he doesn't seem to grandstand ever.
Nope.
Particularly. So, yeah, no, yeah. it was a good addition.
Yeah, I really think that he is a solid addition to the show, mm-hmm. and I really like him. Like, I mean, I was always going to like this actor because, come on.
Yeah. I mean, we've all watched CSI Miami.
We all watched CSI Miami.
And if you haven't, go.
We all like Eric.
Yeah.
We were always going to be on board with him.
With Adam Rodriguez.
With Adam Rodriguez coming joining the show because he's fantastic. And I, like, truly adore Adam Rodriguez because of that and a little show called Roswell.
Yep.
That he was the star of. Well, star. He was in the last couple of seasons, but he was great. And what interests me about it, though, right, when I'm watching it, is like just be watching him and being like, yeah, I'm pretty much right on board with his character right away.
Yeah,
and it's like, and they set up a potential source of conflict because he's used to working alone in his fugitive task force. Though he also had a partner. Like, he keeps talking about. Like, how it was just a lone wolf job, and I'm like, first off, there are no lone wolf jobs in the FBI.
No, but and he had a partner.
You also had a partner that got cut up by a serial killer, so don't give me this lone wolf nonsense. But then again, I mean, that never really comes to anything, because pretty much right away, he gets on board with working as a member of a team without any trouble at all.
Oh yeah, they're eccentric enough for him.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is.
You know.
Oh, no, totally, right? And I think he does a really good job.
And as I said, if he hadn't just come on the show, he could have taken over the BAU.
Yeah, I know. No, he's very pleasant. I think he does a really good job. I'm very happy with him on the show. 100% thumbs up to him and his addition. But what I was getting at here, and sorry for getting so far forward,
Now we go back to the episode?
Now we have to get back to the episode. Yeah. But I just wanted to say, we're pro Adam Rodriguez. We think he did a great job on the show, and he is really a breath of fresh air after all of Derek's problems. Uh-huh. Right? So now the actual episode. And so this is the episode I'm always talking about, right? Because in the entire history, and we're talking like 200 and some episodes at this point.
260, maybe?
260 episodes at this point. You will notice that other than the, like, the white noise of, you know, pro-police state, pro-kind of creepy surveillance state, and pro-FBI that is baked into the show's premise, this show never, ever, ever makes a political statement. Ever. Like, they want to be 100% apolitical.
Yeah, except that they accidentally did one.
Well, no, they've accidentally done it. They've accidentally done it a couple of times.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
The only
thing that they take on politically is the treatment of veterans.
That's true. You're right. That's the only thing
that they take on that's political.
Yeah, and they, as we talked about, they accidentally did an anti-Trump episode years before Trump was running for president.
Yeah.
In an episode that blew our minds when we rewatched it.
Yeah.
Because we're like, wait, this isn't an anti-Trump episode? What? How?
Now, Trump wasn't in politics yet,
but it was, you know, really obviously an anti-Trump episode years before Trump was running. So, but anyway, they're like, we can't keep quiet anymore. We, the people who work at Criminal Minds, have been disgusted by Trump, because I think everybody, you know, well, not everybody, most people were disgusted by Trump. And we've been disgusted by him for a full year now, and we keep our mouths shut. We're finally going to say something about Trump and the toxic environment he creates, right? And that is what this episode is. It's an episode about the toxic, about what they call stochastic terrorism, about the idea of raising the temperature so much and inciting people so much that they just go out and start killing people without you directing them to, right? And this is an episode saying that someone listening to Trump's rhetoric could extrapolate that it's fine to murder families because Trump has said it's fine to murder the families of people you don't like. And they don't ever say Trump's name in the episode, but they're 100% clear about what they meant. Is that fair?
Well, you see, what I'm thinking to myself is that at the same time as this is going on, Beyond Borders is being the most pro-Trump show in the world
is on.
Being done by the same team.
Well, it's not the same team, though. It's completely different writers and producers, just Erica Messer on both.
Yeah. So,
and that's my point. So maybe, right? And again, I could be reading way too much into this, but maybe, like, people on the regular show were so, like, part of their disgust of this maybe this episode is partially built around their disgust at looking at Criminal Minds, Beyond Borders.
I think you're giving them too much credit.
Maybe. I mean...
And there is a woman by the name of Stephanie Sengupta who I don't even know if she writes any more. She does write another episode.
Okay.
She writes two more episodes this season.
And she wrote this but one.
She wrote this one, right?
Yeah.
And it may be that I think, you see, I think it's November 2016.
Yeah.
And if these people had been minorities, if these people had been other, I know because my big problem with this episode is that they don't make a almost bigger stand. Like, I can sort of see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I think it's colored. Like, I don't know what you wrote when you first... Oh, no, watch, because Trump is around anyway. After you watched this the first time, Trump was already around. So that may be coloring how you watched the episode. That it's, I mean, this guy seems to be way out in left field.
Yeah.
And I mean, I could see it like, I could see it if it was taking on, I don't know, like the idea, I mean, it's taking on the bullies, and yet it's not, there's something lacking in it for me. Like, it
no,
just,
I see what you're saying.
It isn't making a strong enough point about how just, how terrible this is, no matter what Emily says at the end.
Yeah.
Like they're sucking up to her big time to keep her on this show.
Oh, absolutely.
Because she may have said, okay, I'll come back from 6 episodes and we'll see how it goes. Because they're giving her really good lines. Like, yeah, really good. Like, she killed it when she ended, right? Keeper. And now she killed it at when she ended this one, right?
Yeah.
So, there's... setting, as I said, they're really sucking up to her to get her to stay. When 3 of the 4 members of the Winona family are gonna, like, I'm watching this, you know, these families, and this kid comes up, but it's a convoluted plan, and in some ways, like, it's a really convoluted kind of plan. Like, I can go out and do this because none of you are doing anything. Like, every now and then I can see where you can make some kind of a connection. I'm not sure in 2016. Maybe what I'm complaining about, what I'm saying, is that I'm not so sure that the show itself, because they've dealt with bullies sort of before.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you call this, and they call it the anti-terrorist cut, and they talk about how it's terrorism, but they don't push it enough in the... in the episode itself. Like, I thought that maybe the fellow members of his terrorist squad, anti-terror squad, might have been a little more understanding. Like, I didn't understand why he was going to decide to kill all of them, too.
I don't think he was going to kill all of them. Watching the episode the first time when I wrote my review and watching at the end, I really think he was going to kill himself in front of his friends. I don't think he was going to kill. I mean, I could be wrong, but my feeling is, watching that actor play that he was going to kill himself at the...
And then make them suffer.
Exactly.
Because they made him kill himself.
Exactly. Like, my feeling is he's not going to... I mean, again, the writer could correct me on this if they want, but watching how that actor plays that scene, I really get the feeling he was going to kill himself, right? And he was going to make them witness all of it, right? And make them live and suffer with that, right? Again, I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, but that is my feeling about how that actor plays.
And I looked at it and I wondered whether or not he was going to kill himself.
Yeah.
Rather than drop the gun.
Yes. Because it really seems like he's ready to kill himself at the end there.
Yeah, because his life has been a living hell.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and the thing that was done to him, I still cannot believe
that there would be no police involvement after that.
After that, that the school.
After he was brutally beaten and left to the elements for 16 hours.
And the principal at that school.
Did nothing.
Is such an ineffective female, and
I know.
Like, the whole thing is, I mean, maybe they tried. Maybe they were trying to say something about
the villainy of these bullies. They were. I'm not saying they did a great job. I'm saying the episode literally says that he's doing this because he was inspired by President Trump. And I mean, there's some inherent irony in being inspired to destroy bullies by America's number one bully.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but that would be, I would never go that far.
I know.
I can see what you're trying to say. And I think the only place that I would agree that you could get it is when you get the pictures of the mob that beat him up.
Yes.
Right? First, the first guy that he was so enraged with and beat the shit out of with his trophies.
Yeah.
And killed him. Mm-hmm. And then, but you see the people in the background, and people could go back and see it because you might miss it. You have to scan the faces.
Yeah, the other two victims are there.
Yeah, the other two victims are there. And then there are other people there too who are obviously their friends.
Who are cheering this on. Yeah.
And cheering all of this on, right? As if somehow or not. And you take a look at their faces, right?
Yeah.
And if he hadn't melted down or hadn't talked to his friend.
Yeah.
He could have probably done a whole bunch more.
Oh yeah.
And the thing is it's flawed thinking because I don't think that that's what would have happened. Bullies are bullies and they never learn. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, they may learn something because he didn't kill himself and therefore this is going to get wider, supposedly.
Oh yeah. Much more. I mean, there will be a court case. There will be a giant amount of press. Like this isn't going away now.
So they may, you know.
They may actually have a chance to learn.
Have a chance to learn. But generally speaking, these kinds of bullies never
do.
Never learn.
Yeah, that's
they grow up. They grow up to be Donald Trump's.
Yeah, exactly.
Donald Trump's the world.
I just think it's so fascinating that the first time. Yeah, that's true.
You know,
I just think it's so fascinating that the first time they ever do something overtly political by criticizing Donald Trump, like directly criticizing Donald Trump, that this episode airs one day after Donald Trump becomes president of the United States.
Yeah, it is kind of weird, you know, in that sense. Yes, it is the day after because it's a Wednesday.
It's the day after. It's a Wednesday. It aired and he was because they
selected the 8th.
Yeah, and it aired the 9th. That's what I'm saying. And it's so crazy because you have to know when they produced this episode, they knew it was anti-Donald Trump.
Yeah, right? That's where we kind of disagree, but
well, again,
I want more proof.
Okay. I feel they knew it was anti-Trump and they thought it was going to be safe to air it because the presidential run would be over, right? The presidential run was going to be 100% over by the time this episode aired. He'll have lost in a humiliating defeat, and then we'll kick him while he's down, is what they thought. But then he won. And they had done an anti-Trump episode, which, again, we disagree on how anti-Trump it was, but that's a conversation we can continue having in the future. It's just weird, because the only other obvious pre-election anti-Trump episode I know about is the Law and Order sex crimes, where Donald Trump is arrested for rape while he's running for president. And the NBC just buried that episode. Like, I don't think it's ever aired anywhere. And the question becomes, were they afraid? Is the reason this episode is so coy about its anti-Donald Trump leaning is it so coy because it didn't want to wind up getting buried the way that episode of Law and Order Sex Crimes did?
Well, it was aired, it was supposed to air November 2nd, but it was the 7th week of the World Series game. It was the 7th game of the World Series, so it ended up being on the 9th.
The 9th. So they actually thought they were going to air it before the election.
Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting too. God, what if that was... What if this was... Sorry. What if this was the closing argument that Criminal Minds was trying to make to convince people to not vote for Donald Trump? If so, they really botched their messaging.
Yeah.
No yeah. Kidding.
Anyway.
Oh my God.
It's all funny. Right. Yeah. As I said, I'll give it some more thought.
That's what I'm asking.
Some more thought and maybe I'll watch it again. It's easier to watch than.
Yeah.
Watching anyway, some other ones, but yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what's going on, but you're right that it could have been a lot clearer. So now let's move on to the important thing about this episode. Their constant misunderstanding and misuse of the term family annihilator.
Oh, God help me.
I don't understand how they can't wrap their head around the very simple idea.
Why did they even do it in this episode? There was no need to do it.
What I love is that it's like, unlike most family annihilators, this one isn't the father. And he doesn't seem focused on avenging his avenging his own humiliation and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, then it's not a family annihilator, is it? It's just a guy who killed a whole family.
So why are you talking about family annihilators?
Why are you insisting on using this term?
You know, well, they go into their profile going, oh, we've got it wrong. He's not a family annihilator. He's, proceed to explain everything about family annihilator. They're looking at them and going, what the frig? These cops
don't.
Do you think that the audience who's been watching this for 11 friggin' seasons now don't know what a family annihilator is?
I know.
Oh. Maybe Sengupta didn't know what a family annihilator was.
Maybe.
And had the book given to her, and she decided she had to put it in. I don't know, because as I tell you, I am sure that there is no one really taking control of at this point the writing room.
Yeah, so, obviously.
You know, but I'm just like sitting there watching this and going, so you needed to fill up 43 minutes and 6 seconds.
Yeah. And oh my God. Well, no, and that's what's so crazy about this scene is that they're like. Obviously, this isn't a family annihilator based on what we know that to mean, what we know that term to mean. That's obviously not what's happening here. So then you get this insane scene of them explaining everything about how a family annihilator operates and what it is, and then going off point by point for how this isn't similar to that at all. So we probably shouldn't have brought it up. That's right.
Maybe,
why did you bring
it up? Yeah, maybe you shouldn't be confusing. Your cops.
Yeah, the cops. Oh, God. Oh, it's so ridiculous.
I know. I just looked at it and went, oh, Lord. It's not even, like, it's just stupid. It's not even offensive. It's not particularly offensive. It's just stupid.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. It's like, literally... All they have to, I mean, and it's the finding the killer is so simple because all they do is they literally say, well, all of these guys were bullies and then the families of bullies were killed. Okay, well, that's probably about bullying then. And then the third guy, he just straight up murders the bully he hates rather than bothering with the family. And then it's simply a matter of, okay, well, did that bully have a particular, was he particularly awful to anyone?
And
oh, he was?
Invades all sorts of privacy.
See laws to figure it out. Yeah, that's true. Oh my God. But yeah, it's
privacy law that
Garcia
will not break.
No, absolutely. Oh my God. It's so funny. But yeah, it's weird because it's not a complicated episode, but between the what I maintain are anti-Trump sentiments.
Uh-huh.
And from your point of view, right, the let's face it, pretty fantastical stuff going on with the cops not being able to just, you know, lock this one down very easily. It's not a very good episode.
No, it's not a very good episode. It's very confusing in some ways. It's like well, what are you supposed to think about this?
I know.
A sole survivor. I mean, and then Emily, like it's static almost, the episode. It's like written with, it's like there's, you don't have any kind of consistency. And I think probably the stupidity of that, their profiling scene.
Yeah.
It destroys the episode.
Yeah, I think it does because it's so like it's so rambling and nonsensical, and like that's Trump. Us calling
okay,
us something
maybe,
rambling.
Maybe that's it. Maybe you're right. Just like Trump.
Just rambling nonsense.
You know, I mean, like I was sitting there. I told you about this. I was talking to you yesterday, and I wasn't. It wasn't this episode, but I think it bears saying that what I could say is yes, but what does that have to do with the price of tea in China?
Yeah.
You know, what do
you're not wrong.
And I think it does completely destroy the episode.
Yeah. Just this extended statement about family annihilators. And that's not the last time they're going to do an extended riff about family annihilators when it has nothing to do with the plot of the episode.
Yeah.
Like, it's just something they love talking about. It's like, no, I hate to say it, but sometimes entire families get killed, but that's not what a family annihilator is. It's a family annihilator only refers to a guy, generally a guy, sometimes it's a woman, but generally a guy, who, again, toxic masculinity makes him resent his family because he can't live up to society's expectations of him. So he murders his whole family and he blames it on them for the expectations they were creating.
Yeah.
Like, and if you want to know about it, just there's this guy called John List. He's a fascinating serial killer. And he's most famous for two things. One, the movie The Stepfather was based on him. And two, he was the first major guy that America's Most Wanted caught. Or was it Unsolved Mysteries? No, it was America's Most Wanted. I always think it's Unsolved Mysteries. But the point is, it was this amazing situation where this guy murdered his whole family and then disappeared. Right? And no one had any idea what happened to him. And this part is a true story. They aired an episode of America's Most Wanted about his story. And then that night, like, 8 different people called up. Oh, yeah, I know this guy. He lives right next to me.
Yeah.
On the other side of the country.
Everybody watched. That's how they found Bambi, too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, everybody watched that show.
And she was living in Lakehead, Fort Worth.
Yeah.
I mean, Lakehead in Canada.
She was the Playboy killer. She was a Playboy bunny who had killed somebody. It was a whole thing. In case people don't remember Bambi Bembenek now.
Yeah.
She was a Playboy model, and she got involved in some shady stuff, and she went on the run. But yeah, fascinating story there. Anyway.
But this episode was... No, and just remind people that they can go back and watch the Mitch Pelagi episode if they really want to know what a family annihilator is.
That's true. They've done an episode about Mitch Pelagi. They never did one fake John List, though. They never did one about a guy who murders his whole family and then disappears.
Well, yeah, but you can't do that because he would have to commit another crime.
That's true.
Right?
For them to get involved.
Be called in. And it would have to be similar. Like, he would have to have killed his second family or something for the BAU to get called in. So they literally cannot do John List because they can't,
have
some kind of show. Or maybe they could do it, but have the BAU go on a show and talk about this horrible killer, right? And show pictures of him. And then people would call into the show and it would be a successful...
And they would have to try and prove that this guy was in fact that guy. And
You know, they could, I suppose, but it wouldn't be worth the time and the trouble.
No, probably not. And I mean, they've actually, Family Annihilators one other time, which of course was the Fox, was making it look like Family Annihilators were murdering their families.
Yeah.
But of course he was just killing them.
Uh-huh.
So it's like they have addressed actual Family Annihilators with Mitch Pelagi and a fake Family Annihilator with the Fox. So they do know what this term means.
Yes, but this is a new writer.
Yeah, okay, that's what it is. So they had to learn it all over again.
There wasn't any place for her to go look.
It's true, they don't have a show Bible, or they don't have a researcher working there anymore. So, yeah.
And nobody in the In the writing room.
No, I think that's clearly true. All right. So let's move on to our final episode of the day.
Yeah, and I'm sad about this. One thing at this. I'll say it at the beginning. Elliot's Pond. When three adventurous Clayton, Delaware teenagers go missing and their last known location is revealed to be the same area where twin siblings went missing over 30 years earlier, the BAU sets up to establish a connection between the two cases. Meanwhile, Rossi makes an announcement regarding Hotch's absence that leaves the team reeling.
Yep.
Okay. So the only thing I will say is that I am very sad to announce that Matthew Gray Gubler apparently did a commentary on this, but I could not get it to play. Every time I would go with commentary, and it would just give me the episode, and there was no commentary. The commentary appears to be missing on my copy, and like, this isn't even, if it was the library copy, I wouldn't be so pissed off.
But this is the one you bought. Yeah.
And
Terrible. I'm so curious to see what he has to say.
I've played this twice, and I can't remember if I already knew this the first time I watched it.
Okay, that's so frustrating.
But it's very, very frustrating because I suspect we would have learned a lot.
Oh, yeah. So, well, I mean, you know what? We will try and track down. Yeah, we will try and track down that commentary because, well, first off, I always just love to hear from him.
Yeah.
You know, he's always got such interesting things to say. Sadly, this episode is not, like, you can tell because it tries to do interesting visual things. Mm-hmm. But it has, and it has way more interesting music than the show usually does. But beyond that, like, you don't get any wonderful genre castings this time, which was kind of a disappointment. There's nobody, like, super famous in the episode.
Well, first of all, Erica Messer wrote it.
Oh, okay.
Like, and remember that she's working on Beyond Borders.
Beyond Borders at this time.
At this time. And I think that she's...
They're not putting the amount of work in they normally would on
episode. Was probably kind of preoccupied. And I would think that... I suspect, this is the one thing I will say, and it's already noticeable as well up to this point, is that I'm not sure that Criminal Minds had as much money as they had the year before for doing things, right? Because that Beyond Borders took a hell of a lot of money to make.
It did.
Those sets were unbelievable.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, to reconstruct all of those sets and
the way they kept doing market after market. Yeah.
And different places and making things look. I mean, and you'll be listening at the same time as you're listening to this. You're going to be on Tuesdays getting our Beyond Borders episodes.
Yes.
So that's fine. But yeah, I have a feeling that there may be a hampering here because there have been no genre players. If I think about this season, is there anybody yet?
Yeah, there's not a lot of big stars this season
or anything,
at all. I mean, we'll see Aubrey Plaza later this year, but
maybe
they
had a little bit of money left over, right? Well, yeah. Bodie Elfman, you know.
Bodie Elfman was there a couple of times, but he's not a big celebrity.
No,
he's just a personal friend of Thomas Gibson.
well, because he's what's her face's.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, her husband. No, her husband. That's why she's named Elfman.
Yeah.
That's her husband. Jenna Elfman, that's her married name. But yes,
that's her husband. Okay.
Yeah, that's her husband. I may have accidentally said brother once before.
They would have met because
they were doing Dharma and Greg, yeah.
Dharma and Greg.
Yeah, so they were obviously good buddies.
Yeah,
no
longer call Aaron Hotch nor Greg.
Well, no, because he's not on the show anymore.
No. But anyway, we haven't called him Greg for a few years.
Ages and ages and ages.
Yeah. But anyway, never mind. That's off the top. Except that, yes, this had the potential to be a lot more interesting, although I don't know who. Well, you would have had to rewrite it to get someone.
Yeah. Well, you needed a celebrity to play the brother.
That's right.
Where you put in a celebrity.
Yeah, no, that's where you need to bring back Brad Dourif.
Yeah, to I'm for that sorry. Kind of part. Yeah.
Yeah, this just guy bring who's that just
driven mad by this situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just and it's just horrific, and it, you know, it's the kind of thing you never get over, and yeah, like
yeah.
The brother is just I really would have loved that's such a good part.
Yes.
Right?
And then for... it has such a happy ending.
Oh, for him.
Yes.
For him. But my problem with this episode, and it's not, and I got a couple of problems with this episode.
I gotta just talk. Oh, please. One more thing I want to get out of the way. And I don't usually watch the cut scenes because I figure the show is bad enough, you know, that when you watch cut scenes, they're going to be just useless. Like, why watch them? You know why they got cut. And for sure, there was a scene, it obviously was written in.
Yeah.
And I am so glad they cut it.
What is this scene?
Okay, well, you know, Ridley. You know the Ridley?
Oh yeah, yeah, the crazy guy.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So what the scene shows is Adam is bringing him in and you have all of the families?
Yeah.
Of these three missing boys are there and they did he do it? You know he's got problems, and it's this whole stupid thing that they've done periodically in the shows, right?
Yeah.
That are useless, and this would have just been, I mean, obviously, Erica wrote it, when the editor got to it, well, it just didn't work. Like, you know, talking about how, well, you know, he has problems and everything else, and did he steal our boys and goes, you know, one of the fathers goes to go after him, and there's Adam Rodriguez trying to Luke Alves trying to keep things calm and take him away.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So I'm going, yeah, that was a totally unnecessary scene, like there are so many in this show. like it would have been as unnecessary and would have really screwed up, just like the profiling scene did in the episode before.
In the previous episode.
So, yeah, so I would say that if you do get the DVDs and you see all of these deleted scenes, don't bother. Unless
you don't always have to watch them.
You don't have to watch them. It's not like you're missing anything. Usually, because we've already said on this show that sometimes you have to just say thank God for the editor. The unseen hero or heroine of this particular show who tries is the editor.
Yeah. Oh, clearly.
Okay. So now we'll get to the rest of the episode.
The actual episode. So here's one thing I bothered me about this episode, which is, why is the FBI involved?
I have no idea. Except that it's close by. I said the same thing.
I'm watching the episode and these kids have been missing for like a couple of hours.
They're
literally just kids who went out on their bikes.
Yeah.
And have not, and no one knows where they got to, right? And I watched the episode and I'm like, why is the FBI here? This is not a federal case. You have no reason to believe they were abducted. There is no signs of struggle. There is no blood. You have no reason to believe they're abducted. They might be lost in the woods somewhere. That could have happened.
Then you would have called out. Yeah, you would have called somebody else out.
You would have called any number of people. You would have. You might have even called the state cops. You might have asked for the Boy Scouts help, blah, blah, blah. But why is the FBI scrambling a plane to look for some kids who just didn't come home after curfew?
Are you sure they didn't drive?
What do you mean?
It's only in Clayton, Delaware.
Oh, you're right. They might have driven. But the point
they might have driven to Clayton, Delaware.
Why are they going there is my point.
There is no reason
for these characters to be going to this place.
Because there's no connection to the earlier case, except that they're trying to hunt the earlier case down. But it's been 30 years. It's not like, you know.
It's not like they immediately thought, oh, well, this must have to do with that. They had there was no reason to believe it had anything to do with that earlier case.
Other than it was just this.
The same area.
Other than it was the only reason that you would think about it. Well, and that's only after, and even then they wouldn't have. They would have just thought, oh, the kids are being so stupid. And they've gotten themselves lost in the woods.
Lost in the woods, yes.
looking after this sort of urban, well,
urban myth. Yeah.
Rural myth.
Either way.
Yeah.
You know. The point is, like, and kids love looking into stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right? They absolutely do. Kids love the strange mysteries of the world they live in and finding out about this creepy guy who lived in an asylum and blah, 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 and they're telling a story about it. And they've got this creepy neighbor. And that's like, there's ghost stories. So it's like, I totally believe that the kids would do this.
Oh, yeah.
My question is, why is this a matter for the FBI?
Yeah, I know.
And
I don't understand.
Exactly
the same thing.
Like, why is this a matter for the FBI?
Now, I enjoyed the show. I enjoyed it. This was.
It's a really well made episode.
Yeah, you know, from beginning to end, and it's not too bad. They have their one, you know, their one little red herring, but
yeah,
it doesn't
with
the weird
neighbor. Yeah.
Basically it's, and you can sort of understand it.
Oh yeah. Like, and I mean, but then again, later in the episode, you're like, oh, by the way, remember when those kids, disappeared all those years ago? Yeah. Like 6 months earlier, a crazy guy had gotten out of the asylum. And he was known for being crazy and thinking aliens were out to get him. Oh, and he had tried to kidnap children in the past. And I'm like, so you didn't look into that guy when the kids disappeared 200 meters from where his shack was?
Yeah. I know.
Because he had them in the basement.
Yeah.
Like, it was not... When you find out who the original kidnapper is, you're like... I don't know how they didn't catch this guy.
Yes, as their older brother points out.
Yeah, like, how did she not catch this guy?
Well, except that what he points out is that he was too proud to call the FBI. No.
Yeah.
And why would the FBI go? This isn't even a...
Oh. Yeah. But no, but the FBI, there's no reason to believe the FBI...
They're not murdered. They're It doesn't
Some
even
kids
look
have gone
like
missing.
They were kidnapped. They've just kind of... Cheat, you know, lied to all of their parents, and they've gone off on a journey and probably gotten lost in the woods.
Yeah.
Like and my niece did once.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It can happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, it can happen. You can get lost in the bush and not be able to find your way home.
Oh,
and this
easily.
Is the equivalent of bush.
Yeah. Oh, we're quite easily, without any trouble, you can get lost and just not be able to find your way back. And what's fascinating for me when I watch this episode is it's like, it doesn't feel realistic that the FBI would in any way have been involved in this situation. Not the original case all those years ago, certainly not the new case now.
No,
like,
not.
There's
not
just no reason for them to be there.
No, not unless it was a few weeks later.
Yeah, but it's like the idea that the kids... Literally, kids missed curfew, and the FBI, like, 8 FBI agents show up 6 hours after 3 kids missed curfew.
And Clayton only has 2,918 people in it.
Well, there you go. The thing is, if there was an active serial killer in the area, and they thought these kids were the new victims, and it turns out they weren't, that would have been fine, but no, like, there's no reason for the FBI to be called out. And now for the thing that the show doesn't broach, but you can't help but thinking about it because you watched it. Yeah. So those twins, definitely having sex, right?
Probably.
Okay. Good.
I mean, I can't imagine them not. I'm.
No.
Yeah. Because they were all by themselves. But how the hell she never got pregnant would be beyond me.
Well, I'd have to assume, and I mean, to get very bleak, I'd have to assume she did and had a miscarriage and was left barren.
Yeah.
Is what I would have to assume happened. Yeah. But okay, well, I'm glad you're with me on that one.
Well, I would just assume. I mean, there are two people left.
Completely
alone.
You know,
well,
the funny thing is,
I was thinking about that and I was going, yeah, but you know, were they old enough that sort of
taboos
this,
were well ingrained enough.
Well, it's not even the taboos, because what they did find out, I mean, this goes way back to a study they did of children who grew up in the kibbutz, in kibbutzes when they first set up Israel in the 50s. Right. They had these kibbutzes. The children were raised communally, essentially, right? And their parents were around. And, of course, their parents really assumed that all of these children would marry one another and maintain sort of the kibbutz and the whole thing. And none of them were interested in one another sexually. In other words, you know, familiarity, they say familiarity breeds contempt. In this case, familiarity brought down any kind of notion that they would be sexually attracted to one another is based on what happens. They know one another so well. They're so integrated with one another and the rest of it. So, I mean, there is a possibility they didn't. You know, I was thinking, but I did think of that almost right away.
When you're watching the episode, it's hard not to think that.
Yeah, it's hard not to think that because these two people, but, you know, who knows, right?
No, of course who knows. We're never going to get a definitive answer on this, but I'm glad we're on the same page, at least.
In Clayton, there's no close airport to Clayton, so they probably drove, and there's this, on the 301, and there's a bridge right over the water.
Okay, into Clayton. Well, there you go.
It's closer, actually. It's not very far from Baltimore. Where does Rob live?
I don't remember the name of the city in Delaware. This is terrible.
Yeah, he lives in some little town, like there's a Dover here and stuff like that.
Yeah, stuff like that.
And it's in that, well, and yes, but it's right in the middle, and there's a place called Smyrna that's bigger. There's Pearson's Corners, but there's all sorts of bush and stuff around it. I guess that must be the lake they were talking about, but that's close to Smyrna. And the Smyrna High School is temporarily closed, of course.
Of course.
But there's the Blakiston Wildlife. Yeah, yeah. So where I'm looking, there's actually a wildlife area. So, yes, the kids could have just gotten lost.
No, they could have. It's not unreasonable at all to think these kids could have gotten lost.
Yeah.
Like, even for a second.
Yeah, I mean, we're focusing on this. But it was the first thing that came to my mind is, how the hell did they get called?
Yeah. You just don't believe it.
Nah.
And that's fundamentally, you just don't believe that they would have been called for this. And that hurts the whole episode. You know, it really does. Like, it hurts the whole episode because it's like you keep sitting there thinking, I just don't get it. I just don't get why they're looking into this case. And I mean, there's some nice scary things when they're locked in the basement and you got the people who are completely pale from having spent their entire lives indoors. So it's like, you know, they do it's very creepy. It's very well shot. And you got the fun of the Spielberg style kids dealing with this crazy situation a la the Goonies or E.T. And by the way, excellent work. I mean, it may not have featured a lot of great use of music, but whoever does the music for the show, amazing job of ripping off the E.T. soundtrack just far enough away from the real soundtrack that they can't get sued. Because it's so clearly.
Yeah, that's what makes those guys, because the three guys that do the music for the show were on it for the full run.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they're the only, I think they're the only ones that won awards.
Well, I gotta say, I was so blown away by their ability to make it sound exactly like it. Without being legally that. I thought that was a really good job, and I was very impressed by it. Uh-huh. So, no, way to go. Way to go, you guys. It was pretty neat. What was the other thing, though? There was another thing that got me about it. Oh, yeah. No, just that it's not a complete anticlimax, but when you get to the end of the episode, right, you're just like, that's it? You know?
Yeah.
They literally just like, well, you know, a mental institution did close down in the area, and there were a bunch of crazy people living in the neighborhood. Maybe it was one of them who took the kids. And then they do noodle out the idea that it's the grown-up abducted kids who are doing the new abductions, yeah. Which is nice. I like that they noodled that out, right? But at the same time, like, it's not super relevant. All you needed to know was, where is the house? And that proves very easy to figure out.
By Elliot's pond.
Yeah. Well, no, and the thing that I found.
But I don't understand.
How did I not even notice that it's even called Elliot's Pond? As if the ET stuff wasn't.
Yeah.
Close enough.
Yeah. Why didn't they get someone from ET?
Yeah. Why didn't you get Henry Thomas in there to play the brother? Oh, they definitely asked Henry Thomas to play the brother, and he turned them down, didn't he? That's 100% what happened.
There have to be people who would turn down.
Oh, no, wait, they couldn't have, because Henry Thomas was in the pilot. I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
They asked Henry Thomas to play Reed, and he turned them down back in the back when the show started. I completely forgot about that part.
Yes.
So, no, they couldn't have. Although, you know what? They might have gone back and asked him again, because it's 12 seasons later. You can bring somebody back.
Just one part, right?
Yeah, it's like nobody's going to notice, you know? Greg Henry was on Murder, She Wrote. 9 times.
Yes, well.
Nobody cared.
Yeah, well, that was a different
time. That was the 80s, I know.
And when you could have, well, they were character actors, and they got.
Yeah, they're character actors, and they came back over and over again.
Yeah, which was.
It was fine. Like, nobody complained when people came back playing a new part, because they understood it was a TV show, but now, for some reason, they won't let actors do that.
Yeah, they're trying to create reality instead of TV.
Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah. The twins missing. Like, I'm going, okay, but this isn't that far from Elliot's Pond, I don't think, either, right?
No, it doesn't seem like it.
When I'm listening to them talking, I'm going, but so they actually went out and they dragged Elliot's Pond, and nobody in this particular town thought that crazy guy might have something to do with it.
Hey, you remember how there was this crazy guy who lived in the woods right next to Elliot's Pond? You know, the guy with the history of trying to abduct children?
Is he lonely?
Yeah, because he's so lonely and he doesn't want to, like, live in his crazy survivalist hut alone.
Yeah.
Oh, God. It was, I gotta say, you're right. The big takeaway from this episode is that it is weirdly, surprisingly upbeat. Like, it's they got a bunch of horror movie stuff in it because of, you know, the people who were locked away, and that's intense. But at the same time, it's a surprisingly, like, pleasant episode. Yeah. It has the most, like, unreservedly happy ending they've done in I don't know how long.
Yeah,
like, nobody goes to jail. Like, the brother finds his siblings. Nobody goes to jail. The kids are fine. Nobody got killed. Nobody got assaulted. Like, it's kind of surprising how positive the show winds up being.
Yeah, you know? Well, all the venom had to have been saved for Beyond Borders.
There you go.
All the
we're not
going
to stop being mean for that mean to that show, are we?
No, never. I mean, never. What I would say is that maybe this was just, I don't know, too sickening. Actually, maybe I'm glad I didn't hear the commentary, because if I had to hear Matthew Gray Goobler say good things about Erica Messer, I'd be choking.
Oh, my God.
I'd
be surprised at how disgusted you are. But she wrote this episode, and she's responsible for the nightmare that is Beyond Borders. So I can understand why you're being so dark about this.
You know, now, maybe she didn't have time. That could be it. Like, this is a, she, oh, maybe that's what it is. She's got so much invested, and of course she would have, in Beyond Borders, right? She has so much invested in Beyond Borders that she just, there was an outline for this, and she just created a perfunctory episode.
That could be it.
You know, just create a perfunctory episode, and it'll, and give it to Matthew, and he'll make it look better than it should.
Yeah, and he did.
I mean, it's as I said, we expect more from Matthew at times, but in this case, maybe not. And besides, he's going to go off for a while, so
yeah, exactly.
And And who knows? I mean, who knows? He just wanted to get out, but he brought Prentice back. Well, who knows? He brought Prentice back. Maybe he talked. As I said, we always wonder whether he talked her into it.
I have to. I mean, I don't know what their relationship is like, but they're obviously very close in real life. So I have to imagine the fact that she was still very friendly with Matthew and Kirsten would convince her that it was a safe show to come back to. You know? Like, I'd have to imagine, right?
Yeah, you would think so.
Okay, good.
Except that they weren't intending to bring her back. So, and you can tell.
Well, obviously they weren't intending to bring her back, but I'm just saying, it's like, I feel like those two people, if any, like, you really get the sense, especially now that I follow her on Twitter, Kristen Vangstas, now that I follow her on Twitter and see how she talks about it, it's like, she really was devoted to this show.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And to the fans and the family. And it's like, she's talking about it constantly. And you really get the sense that, yeah, none of that was a put on. None of that was in any way faux. She was just 100% into this and the people and the work.
I
think that because they were still close in real life, it probably made it easier for Padgett Brewster to come back. Be my guess.
Yeah, except, like, it's really bizarre. Like, some ways, I think that the actors may have been close. I also think that there was something that crossed my mind in terms of Thomas Gibson leaving.
Yeah.
Like this show, it feels rudderless.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, we're only 6 episodes in, and it feels rudderless. And I think that even the, you know, we've talked a little bit about a few things, but I think even the, you know, the firing of Thomas Gibson probably shouldn't have happened.
No.
It
helped. It was one of the things that helped unmoor the show from any feeling of reality than it ever managed to have.
Yeah, and therefore they're scrambling. God only knows what all of these, you know. I mean, they had to pull all his lines out of every friggin' episode.
I know, because they've already written a bunch of scripts.
They would have written a whole bunch of scripts, probably a good portion of the thing, and even you would have had outlines.
Yep,
and all
of
a sudden, you've got to pull.
Have to completely rethink what the arc of the season is.
Yeah. And you've got to completely rethink each episode.
Oh, yeah.
Because what I found, Prentice is there and she replaces, right, because that's at the end of this episode, she's going to take the job, she's going to replace Hotch.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, they just give her Hotch's lines.
Yeah, for the next bunch of episodes. And they sound so ridiculous coming out of her mouth.
And yet they're trying to, you know, and...
they tried to just drop her into it with a minimum of hassle.
And I think they went and got her because they already had to structure in a new character, i.e. Luke, into the structure of the show. That was difficult enough. And then bring in somebody brand new.
Yep.
In story structure. It would have been just impossible because their showrunner was AWOL.
Yeah.
Not that I liked her as a showrunner, but.
But it does make it that much harder.
She had full control of a show in Beyond Borders.
Oh, yeah.
You cannot. The showrunner controls the show, and she is to blame for Beyond Borders.
Absolutely. Now,
her baby. That's the show she pushed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the show she wanted to make. And she was AWOL in this show and this episode, which, as I said, it's not like I've got a lot of things that are massively wrong with it or anything. And I'm so happy that the brother found out that his brother and sister were still alive. God only knows what's going to happen to them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the future.
It's going to be rough.
Yeah. You know, acclimatizing them to the world again. And we don't know whether, like, I wish his parents were still alive.
Yeah, to have seen that it was okay, they were okay.
Yeah, and I don't see why the parents wouldn't have been alive, for example. Like, I could rewrite this episode because he's got to be, he looks older than he actually is. They look older than they actually are.
Well, I mean, because, no, it is 30 years ago. So they are in their 40s. Yeah. But you're right. They're only in their 40s. Their parents easily could have still been alive.
People think I'm in my 40s and I don't look that bad.
No, I know.
You know, I mean, I don't look that bad, and we won't talk about how old I am.
No. No reason to do that.
I know very few people in their 40s or even in their early 50s that look that bad.
It's true. These characters look very bad because of what they've been through.
Well, and I can even say the two who are there, right? But, you know, and yes, okay, so he's drunk. He's drunk himself silly. But he looks like he's 60 or 70.
I know. He does not look as... Yeah, he should look way younger than he looks. Yeah, like he looks ragged. He has had a rough life for 48. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for 48, this man has had a rough life.
Well, and it's gotta be less.
You're absolutely right. Like, easily he could have had 70-something parents, and that would have been no trouble at all for the plot.
No. And I think you could have, I mean, there are a bunch of things you could have done for it. But the big problem with the plot is why the hell the FBI is there in the first place.
I know. No, and there's no way to get around that is the problem.
No. And Clayton, Delaware is too far to drive from. They're at Quantico in Virginia?
Yeah.
Are they based in Quantico?
Yeah, they're based in Quantico.
Yes, that's in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, anyway, never mind. They couldn't have. They would have had to fly to Baltimore and then, or maybe they took helicopters.
You have to stop obsessing over how they got to this place.
It's not helping.
It's not helping.
Sorry, because they were there almost immediately.
I know. They're there in the morning.
And I'm going, how the hell did they get there?
I agree.
It's in the middle of freaking nowhere.
But you still have to stop obsessing over this part. This is not the important part of the episode.
I know, but...
No, it is. It's messed up. I agree with you. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying you need to stop obsessing over this one part.
Anyway, yes. And it was fine. It's just... No, and the one brother... Like, I just... Okay, so they're white because they weren't outside, but why does he look like an alien?
I don't know.
How would he have lost all his hair? Why are his... I
know. He also, the fact that he also looks like an alien is quite strange.
You know, why did they make
it? I cannot defend that choice.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that if I had read the commentary of Matthew Gray Gubler, he would have had a reason for creating that.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I mean, because it would have been his option to do that, and he would have, you know, sort of had some kind of a reason. Or maybe, as he would say sometimes, you know, I just like the look.
Yeah.
You know,
he's done that before.
Yeah. But it's, you know, and the place where they're living is perfectly understandable. And the fact that the twin siblings wouldn't even leave. Right.
Yep.
So, but they did go out to get people so they wouldn't be
to scrounge and get. Yeah. And then they, they thought they were rescuing the kids.
Yes. From aliens. The alien invasion.
Yeah, so they, like, I understand the actions of everyone in this episode. I just, again, we don't understand, A, why the FBI was there, or B, why it was this hard to solve.
Yeah.
Like, those are the two things that you just
can't get. Why in the first place it was that difficult to solve.
Oh, exactly. Like, even especially in the
And why they would blame the brother for killing his children?
His brother and sister?
What?
Yeah, that didn't make any sense at all. Because it's not like, and that's the thing. It's like, if you just blamed him for, you know, not supervising them better.
Yeah.
I kind of understand that. But to then, in addition to that, say that everybody thought he was more directly, i.e. killed them, responsible for their deaths. I'm like, no, I feel like they would just say he wasn't watching out for them well enough and they got lost in the woods or died or whatever. But people seem to think he killed them?
Yeah, I don't...
Like, yeah, that part didn't make sense to me.
You know, I mean, that the whole setup for this, in some ways, it's just, it's redeemed by the final scene.
Oh, yeah. And it's a very sweet final scene, but it's a lot of crap getting us there.
Yeah. You know, and
that's what it comes down to.
Could have been better. Could have been better.
Oh, absolutely.
And anyway.
All right. So that'll be that. We're going to wrap up here, but it's a very frustrating episode, especially because, again, it would have been nice if Matt Gubler could have had a better episode as his episode this season.
Well, if Breen Fraser had written it,
it would have been a
much better episode because they would have collaborated. I suspect that he didn't get to collaborate, no matter what he says in his commentary. He didn't get to collaborate much.
And now you're like predicting what's in the commentary.
Yeah, well, I do that often. So we'll see when I finally get to see the commentary.
When you finally get to hear the commentary, we will see how right your guesses were.
I'm going to see if it works on a different thing.
Yeah, that's what you should do. Maybe. Absolutely. All right, so we're going to call it here.
Yep.
If you're looking for your homework of what you want to watch next week before we talk about more episodes, would you kindly tell them which episodes they have to watch?
7, Mirror Image.
Which one is Mirror Image?
Where a complete stranger contacts Lewis and identifies himself as
Okay. All right. Yeah. The next, what do you call it? Tara Lewis episode, which, and I can't stress this enough, proves 100% that they're never going to do anything interesting with Tara Lewis. Next.
Scarecrow.
Oh, which one is Scarecrow?
When Yakima, Washington authorities receive reports of a woman being abducted and later unearthed, two sets of female remains in a creek bed.
Yeah, with the guy who wears the killer scarecrow mask. And that's why it's called Scarecrow.
Yes. And then we get number 9.
Which is?
Profiling 202. The birthday.
All right. Well, I mean, I didn't like the first episode about this killer. Sure as hell don't like the second episode about this killer. But at least after this, we don't have to
deal with Tommy Yates again.
Yeah, but seriously. Ugh.
Yeah.
All right. Perfect. That should be a ton of fun. So let's do that. Those are the episodes to watch before next week. We hope you enjoy them and then join us back here for that. And of course, on Tuesday, more talking about Beyond Borders, which battered our psyche pretty hard. Hopefully it will have a better impact on you.
If you even bother to watch
it.
We have never recommended that you watch this show.
Not once, no.
Listen to us talking about it and then decide whether or not you want to go back and watch it.
That's, I think, the only sane way to look at this show.
All right.
So anyway, join us back here for that on Tuesday and those next 3 episodes on next Thursday. If you have any questions for us, if you have any comments, if there's any profiling-related fiction you think we should check out, please drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We'll see you. And if you're listening to this on some sort of a podcatcher or podcast app, be sure to give the show a rating, because that is how people find it. And we'll see you back here for more Criminal Minds. But until then, I'm going to say that's right. Au revoir.
And have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.